It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM. Now, today we're going to be talking with my special guest, William Benman. Now, he is the author of the book, The Great Satan versus the Mad Mullahs. Now, we want to talk about this because we're, you know, I mean, how bad does it have to get? I mean, we got Iran, Korea, China, and remember the evil axis, the original, it was Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. And Korea, they were like, you want nukes? Yeah, we got them right. You want Polaroids? They're right here. Oh, we got missiles, too. So this is, you know, they had them up on the shelf, and, you know, things are going to start getting really bad in this country economically, so what are they going to do? They're going to say, you know, we got some distractions for you. Well, you know, it's a rhetoric on all sides, just building up, building up, building up. And then all of a sudden you got World War III and got some real problems. Did you really want to play that game? Well, we have William Benman is with us, and he's from, we got you up here as professor and chair of anthropology at University of Minnesota. Now, we have a culture and international affairs from the Institute for Public Accuracy. Now, we want to talk about the Institute for Public Accuracy for just a moment so that we get an idea of what that is. The Institute for Public Accuracy seeks to broaden public discourse. With systematic outreach to media professionals, the Institute provides news releases that offer well-documented analyses of current events and underlying issues. Well, that kind of pretty much sums up what we want to talk about. William, can you please go ahead and tell us why you wrote the article or the book? And we got it up on the screen here. Let me go ahead and put that up for everybody. You have The Great Satan versus the Mad Mullahs. Why did you name it that?
Well, the reason is because the United States and Iran have been estranged from each other for 40 years, really, well, since the Iranian Revolution. And they have not had any diplomatic contact with each other at all. This means that the communication between Iran and the United States has almost been exclusively through the media. And both sides have an important benefit that they get from demonizing the other side. So the United States regularly demonizes Iran, and Iran regularly demonizes the United States. And this is an internal political benefit for the leaders of these countries. In the United States, no American politician has ever lost a vote by attacking Iran. And the same thing is true in Iran. Iranian politicians regularly attack the United States. That's how they shore up their popularity. So there's you get domestic popularity by attacking the other side, and a lot of the attacks that take place between the United States and Iran are completely based on false information, on misinformation that is being fed to the publics of those individual countries. In fact, Iran and the United States have never really harmed each other in any really important way at all, except for the sanctions that have been leveled by the United States against Iran in recent years. So it is puzzling why both sides seem to be so incredibly hostile toward each other.
Well, you know, the one thing that I really wanted to get to is we saw during the Twitter revolution, or whatever you want to call it, when the people were actually communicating directly with their peers around the world, and you kind of got the idea that the people, certainly the next generation, wasn't necessarily part of this propaganda, this rhetoric. They wanted to have their own voice. And, of course, you know, just like we have here, we got Homeland Defense, you know, from out of the blue, claiming whatever jurisdiction, shutting down dozens of websites and so on. And that's just the beginning. Of course, they go after the weak link, you know, someone that's doing peer-to-peer sharing of, I don't know, whatever files, movies and such. But once they start down this road, well, heck, they might as well be Iran. So I'm interested in what your view is of the people, the grassroots, the people that are in Iran, what their view of America is. Do they see their own government or even our government as a problem, but the people are able to communicate directly? What's your sense on that?
Well, I was just in Iran in August. I go rather frequently to Iran. The paradox is that the Iranian public is one of the most positively disposed to the United States in the entire Middle East. The United States is very popular with the public in Iran. And the Americans who do go to Iran as tourists or as visitors regularly come back, and they will tell you that they've been so well treated, that the Iranians are kind, they're hospitable, they're welcoming. In fact, many Americans say that they've almost been killed with kindness when they go to Iran. And it's an unfortunate that it's really not the same here in the United States. But I will tell you that people who have actually been to Iran have a very, very positive view of the culture and of the society. So there is a discourse where the Iranian people will say, well, you know, most of our trouble doesn't have to do with our people-to-people contacts. We like American culture. We like American society. The problem has to do with our leaders who are at war with each other.
You know, the when they had the hostage taking in the late 70s, I mean, I'm graduating high school in 79, so I remember the old, you know, here comes selective service. You know, you got to sign up. You know, we got to go fight somebody in Iran. Then we had the Soviet Union going to Afghanistan. And it was just, you know, all of the rhetoric that was going on then is exactly what my children in their early 20s now are experiencing now, or certainly when they're in high school. So it's like you have this revolving door of propaganda that just keeps coming around. But the people that were part of the Iranian Revolution back then, you know, are kind of the people that are, you know, supposedly empowered now. I'm wondering, what is it that's influencing popular culture and society there now? I mean, these are people, I would imagine, that were born after the Iranian Revolution. But it was, the revolution was what? I mean, we need to go back in time to understand what happened, because what we have is, it was really the Ayatollahs that kind of took over. So we had the Ayatollahs in, but it was a westernized culture. They're Persian, they're not really Arabic. You know, we had Western culture kind of permeated there because of the Shah that was backed by the United States. Then he goes away and we have religious leaders. But it seems like Iran has maintained a more sophisticated, not only culture, but technologically advanced. I mean, these are, I don't know, what, 70, 80 million people that are semi-educated. So I'm wondering, you know, what we're really dealing with. Are we seeing a revolution or a love-olution in Iran, and we're just waiting another 10, 15 years before this next wave gets in charge? And it seems like the United States government certainly wants to keep them, you know, the evil, pointy-eared whatever. And I'm not sure what is the basis of that. Is it what you say, is it's just to get elected?
Well, in part, I mean, a lot of the American politicians can't really seem to give up the Cold War, and Iran serves as a substitute for the Soviet Union in the Cold War mentality. It serves as a surrogate for the entire Islamic world. And in fact, the joke is, of course, that people who are involved with the thing we identify as militant Islam, like Al Qaeda, are absolutely opposed to Iran, and Iran is opposed to them. Iranians are Shia Muslims, and these the most militant groups of Muslims are Sunni. Iran has never attacked the United States at all, ever.
This is a very interesting conversation. We got a lot more to go in the next segment with my special guest, William Benman from Institute for Public
Beeman, actually.
Beeman. Thank you for that. I apologize. Okay. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit. You stay right there.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Fighting for here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my special guest, William Beanman. It's Beanman, right, William?
Beanman,
I am very pleased to have you talk about your book, The Great Satan Versus the Mad Mullahs. You know, this is something that has been going on and on, certainly all my adult life, that the demonization of Iran was, but think about why we were demonizing them. Before, it was the Shah. Now, he, you know, man, it was the iron-fisted fascist government of you're not allowed to complain kind of thing. And then, but that was okay, as long as he was our, you know, despot. But now, since they have seriously claimed their own independence and been very jealous about holding on to their own country without influence, certainly from the West, yeah, they got to be our enemy. And I'm wondering, is it that simple? Is it because they're not under our control? They have oil. They are starting to express their independence by having nuclear power. They have some cash, some money, some influence in the Muslim world. I mean, you know, what is it? Is it just that simple that we're going to attack with rhetoric Iran just so we can get elected and we got to have an enemy? I mean, because we have like John McCain, he's talking about regime change in North Korea. Let's go have a war with China. I mean, you know, and it's always been Iran. So is it just so we have someone in the wings that we can demonize, or is there something that we want from them, or is what we want for them is just capitulation? I mean, we just...
Well, There's a background, and that is that, you know, the United States was, of course, very angry with Iran as a result of the hostage crisis in 1979. And there are some people who never will get over that. They consider that to be the ultimate insult to the United States, and they never feel that Iran was punished enough for it. So they're very unhappy about it. Now, during the Bush administration, we had a group of neoconservatives who had been involved with George H.W. Bush, the last president's father, who had developed a plan for the complete revamping of the Middle East. That is, regime change in every nation in the Middle East, in order to make the Middle East safe for Israel. They presented this plan to Benjamin Netanyahu in 1996. They sent it as a plan to Bill Clinton, President Bill Clinton, in 1998, the Center for the New American Century. The plan was, first of all, to get rid of Saddam Hussein. They were successful in getting the Bush administration to do that. Then they were going to remove all of the regimes in the Middle East, Syria and Iran, and they felt that would reduce the possibility of any threat to Israel. So during the Bush administration, the United States was looking for some plausible reason to attack Iran, just like they looked for a plausible reason to attack Iraq, the weapons of mass destruction ploy that they used on the American public in order to convince the American public that that attacking Iraq would make sense. And so there have been a number of attacks that have been made against Iran that have tried to convince not only the United States but the rest of the world that Iran was very dangerous and that it needed to be attacked. And we still have people in our government who are calling for a military attack against Iran in order to stop Iran's nuclear program. The fact that there's no one anywhere has demonstrated that Iran actually has a nuclear weapons program doesn't seem to deter them at all. And we now have people like Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina calling for the United States to go and completely destroy the Iranian military, sink their navy, destroy their air force, destroy their army, and without any regard for the fact that would touch off a complete conflagration in the Middle East. It would be disastrous, and it would be something that would be cataclysmic for the entire world. But they seem to be irresponsibly calling for this anyway.
Because, I mean, so I'm still trying to get back to the reason.
Well, the reason is the neoconservatives from 1990 onward have wanted to destroy the government of Iran in the mistaken belief that that would somehow make Israel safe.
Okay, now this, see, it's like the third rail Israel. You know, it's always,
it's true. And Iran and Iranian-American relations and American-Israeli relations were on a completely different track until the Bush administration. And once during the Bush administration, Iran and Israel became fused in American foreign policy. So you get the formula that if you are friendly toward Iran or even neutral toward Iran, you are an enemy of Israel. And that's been the political formula that we've been living with ever since 2000, ever since the Bush administration came.
Well, with the WikiLeaks, we start having the conversation is turned to Israel saying, see, this just proves what we were saying.
It doesn't prove anything.
Well, you know, they're going to say whatever they're going to say.
Yeah,
but
I know, but it doesn't prove anything because the United States has been going to the rulers of the Persian Gulf who are afraid of their own people. And are afraid of the fact that there are large numbers of Shia population in their own countries, and they're afraid that Iran would stir up that population and would overthrow them. So they would love to have the United States come and just without costing them a penny or any blood or any military equipment, they would love to have the United States come and just take out Iran. That would be and that doesn't prove that Iran is a danger. All it proves is that they would like to have the United States do something that would tend to shore up their own political fortunes in their own countries.
Well, the one thing that I'm really concerned about is that like you're saying in the description of your book, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I'm wondering who is behind this push. And it kind of keeps, focusing over towards Israel.
Well, there's no question that groups like AIPAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee in the United States, is a major, major lobbying group that tries to get U.S. Congress people to attack Iran. It's a litmus test. If you don't oppose Iran, if you don't call for sanctions or attacks against Iran, you are going to have very, very deep trouble in the next election.
Well, do you have some experience in Washington with congressmen talking to them about, can you stay another segment? Do you have time?
I'm afraid I don't. I have a class I have to go to.
I'd like to keep you on speed dial here. We'll have you back again soon.
I'd love to talk to you more, but when we're in academic life, we aren't like we're in a think tank in Washington. We can't be available all the time. I do have students that are waiting for me. In fact, they're my students in Middle Eastern society and culture.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we'd love to have you come back as this develops because I'm sure it will. And
I would caution your listeners not to understand that the WikiLeaks documents do not prove anything about Iran.
Yeah, no. That's not.
All they
just
demonstrate
more
is the opinions of diplomatic personnel and leaders who have no better information about the actual situation in Iran or Iran's nuclear program than you or I do.
No, I mean it's State Department communicated back. They're going to say whatever they want to say anyway. It's just more rhetoric. More rhetoric. I get it. But we do want to follow. You try to avoid. The third rail Israel, but it just keeps coming back.
It definitely is going to be part of the mix. No question.
William Beeman, great book. The Great Satan versus the Mad Mullahs. We'll be right back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, what's that goal here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock? How about truth, justice, what used to be the American way, where the heck that was? Well, the rest of the world doesn't know. I mean, we're trying to find out. Somebody who's going to help us find out here. We got Bumper Hornberger, Jacob Hornberger from the Future Freedom Foundation is going to come on, and we're going to talk about his article, Madison Was Right About Korea. And it's just this entangling alliance thing. And I'm just, let me tell you why this is so timely. 2001 was our first Freedom Summit. Oh, yeah, freedomsummit.com. Make sure you go check it out. You know, this Friday we decide what we're going to do. It's going to be the foreclosure gate thing. We're just going to take 15, 20 minutes and just explain, look, this is what happens. Real simple. The big giant chunk of money in the pension funds, and they say, ooh, how do we make that money our money? Well, this is how we did it. And now what? You know, I mean, just it's going to get much worse. I can't overstate how bad it's going to be. I mean, this is, of all past, the greatest depressions of the past, you know, well, this is greater than the greatest. We're going to be great, 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 and our grandkids are going to be talking about, ooh, I remember in the day, got chick, 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 chick kids. Well, this is what we're going to be talking about the Friday. It's a meet and greet kind of thing. $20 gets you margaritas and appetizers. Oh, who loves you? You know, so, and you get the program. Well, it's a lot of the speakers come in Friday night and they're just kind of, you know, give something to do. And everybody go, it used to be dinners that we would do just to meet with the speakers and everything. And then everybody and their grandma wanted to go and could find, ah, screw it. We'll just go ahead and test all the sound equipment and everything Friday night and we'll have a really big show. So that's being promoted and we're going to get this mortgage thing understood. Well, it's more than that. That's just kind of a segue into what is going to happen after the implosion of all this stuff. Because when the new Congress and Senate comes in, what's going to be different? You know, Dr. Paul's making a really good case for quit extending the debt ceiling. What's the word I'm working for? Duh. So, yeah, whatever. But we're going to try and, you know, get a beat on everything. And one of the people that can help us with that is Bumper Hornberger. Now, the reason was, is we had him as one of the speakers in our first summit. Our first summit in 2001, 3 weeks after 9/11. That Sunday, they started bombing Afghanistan. I remember Butler Schaefer came in. He's one of the speakers, and he is again this year, too. Butler Schaefer, he writes a lot on Lou Rockwell. He's a professor at Southwestern University in L.A., and he's, you know, the constitutional law professor. And he came, he's all about, you know, anarchy in the USA. Well, he was saying, he walked into the room. The summit had just started, 9 o'clock in the morning. He goes, well, just want everybody to know, we started bombing Afghanistan. And everybody sat around and we're just like, we knew where this was going. Bumper was the keynote speaker the night before, and he warned of this. And he was saying, you know, I remember if you read the article, Madison was right about Korea. Now, you find it up on Freedom's Phoenix, and I'm sure if you just put in Madison was right about Korea. A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty. The means of defense against foreign danger have been always the instruments of tyranny at home. Among the Romans, it was a standing maxim to excite a war whenever a revolt was apprehended. Throughout all Europe, the armies kept up under the pretext of defending have enslaved the people. Yeah, I'm not really good with their grammar. But the point is that, you know, of course you're going to have the standing army thing. And if you got a standing army, well, what are you going to do with it? We're going to play army. Well, that's the point that he was making then, and he knew where this was descending. Well, I read the article, Madison was right about Korea, and it reminded me of his speech at the summit in 2001. If you have been an attendee to the summits, you have been able to do, because what is it? It's an annual update of our current status of freedom. It's not an optimistic or a pessimistic view. It's just where are we at? Because ourselves and a lot of our friends, they don't have time. They're not, you know, publishers of a Freedom's Phoenix website or anything. I mean, they got a life. Yeah, children. We got things to do. So what do? We bring the best minds of the modern freedom movement together, and we say, look, here is our annual update. A lot of the issues are going to, I'm just sent out to all the speakers. You know, give me all your topics. I'll be entering those into all the places on freedomsummit.com. And on Freedom's Phoenix, we'll put a post up there of all the titles of all the speeches and the summaries of them. Now, you go to freedomsummit.com and you go ahead and you can see all the speakers and you look at their bios, kind of get an idea what their expertise is. But, you know, this is where, you know, we're going to find out what's what. I'm going to go ahead and put that up. They've started sending me all the titles because we wait because the news changes. I mean, the news changes like daily. I mean, if we'd done it even last week before Thanksgiving, if we put up the titles, you know, what would we have missed? North and South Korea China, Iran, WikiLeaks, TSA. I mean, you know, that's just 1 week. You know, plus, and the stock market's taking a dump. I mean, I hadn't even looked at it. You know, where are we at now? Let's go ahead and take a look at the stock market. Yeah, I'll let you guys look here on the video where I'm going with this, and we'll just go ahead and take a look at, you know, what, I mean, dang, you know, what we got going on. Well, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, pull up a little bit. We'll see where we're at on the stock market. Does it matter? I mean, with inflation, can you even, you know, use that as some kind of a bellwether for what's going on? Probably the best thing is you're looking at precious metals. Well, in the euro this morning, gold already hit all-time highs. You know, with the exchange rates and then, you know, you different currencies have different records. But let's go ahead and take a look. What we got here? Gold chart. And, oh, yeah, boy, with the 1390, and now it's down to 1382. It shot up from 1365. Silver opened today at $27, and it's at 27, what is that, 96 now. So, no, what does that say? Yeah, that's what it says, 2798. So I'm going, okay, so we're having, you know, bad news. What are we going to do with it? We need to understand what this means months into the future. We have, like today, we talked about it yesterday, and I want to, here, let me show you this. This is good. Put it up on the screen here. What I'm showing here is it's not even really a citation. If we come to visit you, we're going to get our money from you from the city of Phoenix. Let me tell you what happened. Yesterday, I find out later after the show, you know, all this tapestry. Because today I had to go to traffic court, okay? You know, so just in the period of, you know, less than 24 hours, all this kind of happens. You can feel this is going to be happening in your community, in your state too, because they don't have a choice. This is what's going on. Donna, my wife, is at home, and she, all of a sudden, you know, it's a, you know, knock on the door, dog barks, goes out there, there's a man standing there with a clipboard and uniform. So I'm from the city of Phoenix. We're here to inspect your green pool. We haven't had a pool up for weeks. We have, you know, an above-ground pool that we put up there for the summer. We cool off. We swim. We put it over our garden because at 115 degrees, you're not planting a whole bunch of stuff here in Arizona, I tell you that, unless it's in the shade. So we take and put, you know, we have water storage. I mean, water is, like, an important thing here. So we go, okay, we got the water here. We jump in the pool when it's hot. You know, it's no big deal. And it's got a little pump. We got, you know, it's chlorinated. We, you know, we take care of it. When it's time it starts getting too cold, what happens is Donna starts to drain it. It has a drain at the bottom. It's above ground pool, a little 12 foot by 4 foot deep. So it holds, I don't know, thousands of gallons. I mean, it's enough. You know, it's better than not. So what happens is she puts the hose to it, and she just runs it to the front yard and starts watering the lawn. And she'll water the back lawn, and she'll just let it kind of drain down. It gets down to about a foot or so. She stops putting chlorine in it, you know, whatever, and it get a green tint to it or whatever. Maybe, I don't know, I wasn't paying attention. But what happened was, you know, then she just, you know, lets it go dry, takes it down, you know, cleans it, takes it down, puts it up, done. Weeks after that, we get a visit from the Phoenix Po-Po, well, not really police, and they say, hey, We got to go in your yard and check your green pool, give you a citation. She goes, no, you're not. So we'll look over your fence. Okay, go ahead. And then they came by the shop. They came by the shop. When we come back, I'll tell you what they did. They came by the shop here, the workshop, and then traffic court today. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock. Turn on the tube.
Yeah, get over it here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock. You don't need to do it with me neither. You can do it all by your lonesome. You just do it yourself. This is how you do it. This is how you do it. This is how you do it. I declare my independence. See how easy it was? And you don't even need a government form. Well, there's some other people saying you ain't independent no more. Well, we have on Freedom's Phoenix, there is a link to DHS, Department of Homeland Security, whistleblower. They're training local police to suspend rights. Well, this is a when they did Camp FEMA The Enemy of the State, Part 2. There was a gentleman in there named Travis Maddox that they interviewed, and he was talking about how they take police department personnel and they go through this department of whatever. But I'm sure it's funded. Okay, it's always a federally funded thing. You want to get an extra couple of days of training, and you get some, indoctrination. Well, we're gonna help you out. All right. Well, there's always some funny. It's all about the money. You know, they got the carrot out there, and I'm sure there's a stick somewhere. So what's happened is you can start to see when we knew this, and it really got confirmed when we had the Phoenix Police Department here talking about when we were prepping for doing the opt-out day, and all I had to do was say, you know, we know what's going to happen with the economy. I mean, just look at your pension funds. You know, we know what the conversations they're having with, we need to get some money. You know, what happens? You know, how does this manifest itself in your life? Well, you get the guy knocking on your door saying, we got a green pool violation. And he said, you know, we have a complaint. Well, the first thing my wife scratched her head, she's like, a little above ground pool kind of, you know, she had it down for weeks anyway. But she's going, from who? And they go, well, we have aerial video surveillance. Okay. Well, we gotta check it out. We gotta go look. We gotta take pictures. We gotta close the file. Boxes to check. Got it. She goes, fine. He goes, well, we can just take a picture from over your fence from the alley. She's going, yeah, whatever. But I'm not, you know, go do what you gotta do because I'm not helping. Okay. Well, I'm sure that's what they did. She comes down here. We're doing some cleanup and so on and organizing some stuff here at the workshop. And she all of a sudden there's a woman comes in with their City of Phoenix pickup. Well, she's out there talking to him. I just, you know, I'm busy. I'm on the radio and whatever. And then break. And I go, what was that about? Oh, they're going around checking any commercial address has to demonstrate that they have a contract with a refuse removal. Like you got a trash bin. Well, what we have here with the landlord, they have, you know, like he's big. We don't generate much trash at all. So we have one that they use for the facility here. You know, the strip center has a few of them out, and, okay, that one's ours. Oh, no. Lawrence, you have to have an individual contract with it. I go, really? Well, you know, this sounds like you need to talk to the landlord. Nope. That wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. We need to have, you know, we can do a citation. I go, so we're guilty until... we got to prove our innocence or whatever. You guys want to play this game? So they kind of back down a little bit. And, you know, and Drew's taking out, you know, his quick on his video phone. He's got video camera. He's saying, oh, we're going to have a show on this one. Yeah, but we'll just back off here a little bit, you know. No, we'll check. We'll follow up. Now I'm going, yeah, I want that citation. We're going to have us some fun. So we'll see where that goes. You know, I'd like to see. This is seriously, it's that bad? Well, of course, they're out. Trying to protect her, you got to generate revenue or they don't have a job. So a few weeks ago, I'm leaving the workshop here and I'm at the stoplight and I'm checking my voicemails. So I got my voicemails. And I'm just, you know, blah, blah, blah. I got a Bluetooth on. I got my little droid, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, doing my thing and I'm listening to it. And then somebody's leaving a phone number. So I take a pad of paper and I put it up on the steering wheel and I start writing down the number. The light turns green. There's a couple of cars in front of me. And I saw a police SUV right behind me. You know, he's there. You can wait a second. I let some distance get between me and the front. And I started moving forward. I finished writing and I put it down. Well, then I go. Well, the officer, man, he was none too happy about it. Man, I didn't floor it. You know, it's kind of like New York City thing. It hits green, man. You better already be moving or on the horn. So I'm just like, you know, seriously, he races up beside me, looks in, and then he... hits the brakes, goes behind me, turns on his lights, pulls me over. Well, I know why he's pulling me over. You know, he saw me writing on the steering wheel. You know, had the pad up there. And it was, it just frustrated him because, man, it was rush hour. He just wanted to go. Well, I wasn't being unsafe. I was making sure I put enough distance between. It was no big deal. I mean, we're talking like a car length or something. I mean, it was just nothing. So he pulls me over and he says, do you know why I pulled you over? And I waited the appropriate amount of time and I just kind of looked at my steering. I'm just like... because you can. And he didn't like that. And of course he saw, you know, the Ron Paul and the Freedom's Phoenix bumper sticker on my car and so on. And he's like, goes, and he says, well, I don't pull people over just cause I can. And then he calmed down. He's like, whew. He caught himself. I'm like, oh, you think he protested a little bit too much there, you know? So he just kind of, well, let me see all your stuff. Well, I didn't have a current, insurance card. So I showed them this old one. Yeah, well, you know, whatever. And they write you up for, they like that one. That's like $600, you know. So they write that up, and then you just go show it today. I just show it to them, and they dismiss it. Well, he gets me for unsafe lane change. This is what he said, that my tires touched the white line, and therefore it was unsafe, and I came back, and I didn't, and it kind of, so whatever. I'm not even sure. He just made it up as he was going along. So I'm going, okay, whatever. And he started talking, saying, well, you know, it's a, you shouldn't be, and I'm just, you know, looking at him. I mean, seriously, it's going to cost me a couple $100, and I got to put up with this too, you know? So what happened, he just kind of, you know, chilled out and, you know, gave it to me. He was really nice and everything. And I just like, you know, okay, it's, you know, it's because you can thing. I mean, I kind of made my point. There was another officer that stood in front of the car, and he's watching me. And I asked, you know, and it was the last warm day here before it started getting cold, because it's still warm up in the November a lot of times. It doesn't even start cooling off until after Halloween. So I'm going, and it was, I'm sweating a little bit. It's getting kind of warm. So I'm like, you know, I could turn on my air conditioner. And kind of, so the other officer standing in the front of the car watching me, another car came. I called him over, and I said, hey, it's getting kind of warm. You mind if I turn on the car? No, don't touch the ignition. All right, man, just checking. Just seeing, you know, where we're at here. So it didn't take too long. He writes me a ticket and goes. So we had Mark Stevens on. He loves challenging this stuff. Well, I'm already kind of in it with the Phoenix police here. You know, some guys that are supportive of what we do here. They like us keeping them informed and everything. But there are some politicians, they just love to get some Ernie. So it's, you know, do I really fight this thing now? Do I start? You know, I'm right on the edge. Do I want to do this? I'm getting the insurance thing dismissed. It's just this. I take the class, and of course, the fine is $200. Well, taking the class is like $200, but it doesn't go points on your license. So that's how they get you. And I remember when it was $90, $100, $100, $150, $150. And as they go up, well, of course, the class keeps going up. Well, who teaches the classes? Former and off-duty police officers. It's like, oh, you get to pick from a bunch of these guys. Yay! I get, you know, selection of fascism. Yay! So this is, and now they got it to where it's a little bit more expensive, but you can do it from the comfort of your own home on the internet. Oh, you get to make even more money. Oh, and they got a cut of that. So, you know, I'm before the judge, and of course, I'm always the last one to get called. They always call me last. So I take my little laptop in there, I'm, you know, taking care of business. So then they call me up, and I, you know, I'm just, you know, options. They give me the spiel, and I'm just, and I now I won't say anything. She's like, "Is there problems here?" Yeah, I'm going, yeah, you know, society will deal with this, and I will learn to cope one way or the other. And I just, you know, just let it go, because I get mine. You know, what battle do I want to fight? What sword do I want to fall on? Where do I? I'll get mine. You know, but a lot of people don't have that outlet. They aren't creative, and they act out. I wouldn't say maybe destructively, but more, you know, they're not efficient with their time. Because I, as a lot of people, certainly in the freedom movement, have a sense of justice. You know, there's always going to be a sense of justice. Well, how do I do that? Well, I get to tell you about it. You know, that makes me feel a little bit better. So they'll get a couple $100 out of me, and I got to spend, you know, however many hours at home on the internet playing games with them. So do I get something, you know, because I could have challenged this, I could have gone through, but, you know, my time and effort, you know, I don't want to fall on every sword. But, you know, had it not gone well at the Sky Harbor Airport, he'd been a little bit more of a butthead, had there been just one, I mean, I'm waiting for the judge to give me a reason. Give me a reason. Oh, I'll make sure. Yeah, it costs you a lot more than the $200 you're going to get out of me. Oh, and I'll get it some other way, because you know what this is going to do? This is what we're going to do. There are some love cards that were done as Christmas cards that we did in New Hampshire back in 07, or no, it was 08 election cycle for Dr. Paul. I think it was the Christmas of 07. And we're going to make up some of those, and we're going to put them on cars parked downtown at parking meters and put nickels in. And we're going to go right in front of the meter maid, and we're going to cost them. I guarantee that in less than an hour, I cost them more than the $200 they got out of me, and they can get me and take me to trial on that one. Yeah, we're going to save you some parking money. And they're going to get, oh, it's illegal. It's illegal. You're going to get me. But I get justice. Justice. And it's worth all the money. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Jacob Hornberger, Future Freedom Foundation.